Off the Ball Breakfast.
I find it funny your analogy for this Champions League is that it's a sinking ship.
Well, am I talking about the world or am I talking about football? Either way, Atalanta are getting out.
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by William Hill. Download the app and play today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.
Now, if you love sporting nostalgia and football transfers that almost happened and didn't happen, in a world when we didn't have Fabrizio Romano and David Ornstein telling us about every transfer before it even happened, Richie McCormack has decided to take a deep dive into all of it. You know what, Rich? You don't stay away for long.
No.
Nathan Murphy back in Golf Weekly this week.
Was he?
And here you are back in OTB Towers talking to us again.
There you go. It's delightful to be back up here at full two floors back to the third to be speaking to yourself about this. Well, yeah.
So the podcast stuff, this is going to be a six-part series.
Yeah, six-part series. So the basic synopsis of it is, the series is called Sliding Doors, and for those who don't get the reference, it's in relation to a 90s movie that starred Gwyneth Paltrow.
I was going to say, are Gwyneth Paltrow fans going to turn around and go, oh my God, someone's finally done a six-episode deep dive in the film?
It only dawned on me when I finished the thing, I was like, people mightn't actually get what Sliding Doors means. So it's this sense of missed opportunity and what might have been. And in the instances of these transfers, they kind of range across the spectrum of would have had a massive influence on the other club that could have signed this particular player that's the subject of this episode, or, and there is one that's, you know, would have had minor influence, but it's certainly an interesting one that happened just this past year. So it kind of takes in the breadth of the lot of them, and yeah, it's thrown up a couple more since that I'm possibly going to have to get around to if there's ever time for a series two.
So you're speaking to a captive audience here. I always think about these where you hear about Ronaldinho almost went out on loan at one point to, I think, Dunfermline had looked for him when he was at PSG and he was a very young player. Obviously, it didn't happen, but it's one of those kind of great what-ifs. What would have happened if Ronaldinho rocked up in the Scottish Premiership?
Yeah, but the one we have that's I think starts off the series is Ronaldo, 90s Ronaldo, the good Ronaldo, almost signing for Rangers. Now, I kind of put this down to, whatever. And there's a lot of these stories you kind of initially do. This series obviously goes to those particular potential transfers that went beyond that little, whatever. These are transfers that almost happened. So you cast your mind back to, I think it was the summer of 1997. Ronaldo has become disenfranchised with life at Barcelona after just 1 year because certain promises were made to him. Those promises aren't going to be met. There's going to be changes in management, et cetera, et cetera. So he gets a bit antsy and is looking around. Now, his agents are casting around Europe, and at the time, the big money was still being spent in Italy. So obviously, a lot of the big Italian teams, and if you go back through old episodes of Gazzetta on YouTube, which I'm prone to do, you'll find about half a dozen Serie A sides of the time that were interested in signing Ronaldo. The one that jumped out at me, and it's one that he revealed afterwards, and I was like, yeah, right, whatever. But I went and did a bit of digging, went into the newspaper archives and all of this, and there was a very real element of truth to Rangers' interest in signing Ronaldo in the summer of 1997. Now, if you look at the modern-day Rangers, you'd kind of think, oh, there's no way they could financially compete.
They were double contracting at the time, weren't they?
They had an obscene amount of talent within their squad. So I think that summer, the likes of Jörg Alberts came on board, but they'd already signed, obviously, Paul Gascoigne, Brian Laudrup. They had a really, really good squad. Unfortunately, they couldn't get it done in Europe, which is why the Ronaldo story came to the fore, and which is why Dave Murray, who was the chairman at the time, had the phenomenal idea of potentially signing Ronaldo, offering him the moon, the stars and everything that is above Glasgow, and saying that he wouldn't even have to play in the Scottish Premiership of a Saturday.
Just a European game.
They would be maintaining Ronaldo purely for European games, and this is 100% verifiable that this was something that had been proposed. Ronaldo's agents at the time say, Rangers came to us, they had a really sizable financial bid. In the end, there were only really three clubs, I think, that were in the race formally to sign him at the end of the day. Inter, obviously, is where he ended up. Lazio were another name at the plate. And the third team that was right there, unbelievably, yet actually believable, is Rangers.
That's remarkable. It's a year and a bit out from the World Cup. He's already pretty much the biggest young star in football at the time. Zoff and Shearer have moved for like big money.
Shearer went for 15 million. I think we were looking over 20 million for Ronaldo in the summer of 97 to go to Inter. It was an obscene amount of money. Now, you kind of think about the player that rocks up at the 1998 World Cup. If he's one that's, you can look at it one of two ways, either undercooked from the fact that he hasn't played week in and week out against the Hibs, Hearts and St Mirrens of this world.
Or his knee or in a better condition.
His knee and his head is in a far better condition than what it had been. And there's not necessarily this need to absolutely rubber stamp his status as the world's best player. David Murray said they had the money to do it. Ronaldo and his people have both said that they had the money to get it done. It's just one of those ones that you're kind of left thinking, wow. I think around the same time Rangers signed Marco Negri.
They would have, yeah.
So that season, obviously, Negri's first season in Scotland, scored a hatful of goals, and he was one of a string of strikers who's performed well in Scotland and then gotten the hump in the second season and wanted to go. Your Pierre van Hooydonks and your Georges Cadets at Celtic will add to that too.
The other thing is, it's not that incredible really if you consider three seasons before that, Rangers are in the last four in the European Cup.
Yeah, ultimately that's what they were looking at, is that they'd reached the latter stages in that inaugural Champions League season, the one where they'd performed so well initially against Leeds and then obviously gotten results against Marseille. They hadn't done well in Europe since then. Like, there'd been group stage exits and they really didn't make a dent. So Murray and the Rangers board wanted something that would solidify their status as a European great, because they were running away with Scotland at the time in the midst of the nine in a row and all that. And they saw this as being the final piece of the puzzle.
There's part of me that kind of wishes this happened when it comes to sliding doors as well.
Oh my God, I absolutely wish this like... I don't think either one of us is a Rangers fan.
No.
But I just think purely for the optics of the best player in the world only having to play in the Champions League, like being rolled out as one of Mr. Burns's, you know, ringers in the softball episode of The Simpsons. It's like, oh, we've got Borussia Dortmund at home, have we? Marco Negri, you can go back indoors, wheel out Ronaldo.
Here's our new cleaner,
yeah,
Ronaldo.
Fantastic.
Richie's definitely got The Simpsons on the brain here as well. Like, literally just before we came on, you said someone has actually replicated Homer's Super Moon Waffles.
I've DM'd it to you.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so enjoy that when we finish up this. Yeah.
I can't help but think, first of all, that's a cardiac arrest in a treat.
100%.
But at the same time, I'm intrigued that someone has followed that directly.
Yeah, like, we've all got a sweet tooth, which is why, you know, we're all kind of attracted to these transfer stories, I think, as well. Like, I would have grown up in the teletext era, refreshing page 302 just to see if something has happened on the transfer front and seeing if there's any movement.
I realise that, you know, nostalgia as we get older becomes more and more attractive, and it's great to go back to your childhood and all that.
It's a mental illness, as they used to regard it back in the day, but yeah.
But there was definitely part of me in the pre-internet, particularly the pre-Twitter age, which actually loved the idea of picking up a newspaper or one of the soccer magazines and seeing potential transfers that could happen, going to CFAX or going to RTE and clicking page 220 just to see if that transfer has gone through.
Yeah.
I remember even when, say, Manchester had signed Juan Sebastian Veron, who was this player that you saw in Gazzetta and he looked like this amazing, you know, player in Italy. And next thing Manchester are buying him for a shed load of money. There was something really attractive about that. And it almost broke basically when it happened.
Yeah. You see Liverpool fans almost reminiscent of reminiscing about the time they signed Fabinho, which was a signing that came out of the clear blue sky. Nobody had... to the best of my knowledge, nobody had flagged this in advance to say, oh, by the way, Liverpool are looking at a defensive midfielder. There's a lad at Monaco who looks like he would fit their criteria. They're looking at a range of options. There was nothing like that. It was like a Thursday night. I think I was working the sports desk at the time, and it's like Liverpool had paid 40 million to Monaco or whatever it was for Fabinho, and everyone's like, all right, this is like harking back to back in the day when, you know, you'd refresh the teletext page, or you'd pick up the back page of a newspaper, and that would be the first you'd hear of a potential move. But the modern era has changed all that, and the transfer and the player has already played out in your mind before they've actually even put pen to paper on Anthony. So today, like, we already know what Jean-Philippe Mateta is going to look like in a Nottingham Forest jersey. We already know what Jürgen Strand Larsen is going to look like in a Palace jersey and all that kind of stuff. And back in the day, you kind of had to let your imagination run wild, if at all you got that little bit of a glimpse behind the curtain. And
I appreciate the photoshoppers at the time who had to put a little bit of work into it. They need to find a jersey that actually, you know, roughly fit, and then they would have to find a way of pasting it on. Nowadays it's just like AI, give me a picture of such and such at stadium wearing a Chelsea jersey and bang, it's out there.
Yeah, the greatest photoshopping job ever done was that picture of the Republic of Ireland squad that was taken at Lansdowne Road, but about 7 or 8 members of the squad were missing. So they genuinely did get ringers in. And this picture was used on, people will probably still have it somewhere at home, it was used on club, or what are they called? Call cards.
Oh, yeah.
And it was used as posters. But there's a lot of them are very identifiably not that person, but their head has been superimposed onto it.
So yeah. I'm not going to give away which supermarket were giving away that poster, but I definitely had that when I was a kid. And I remember looking at it and really weirdly, I think Andy Townsend was definitely one.
I think the Villa cohort were among those. So
it was Ray and Tim.
And Ray Houghton, I think, was about 6 foot tall in it, which if we all know that Ray Houghton is not 6 foot tall. Paul McGrath's shoulders do not look like Paul McGrath's shoulders, et cetera, et cetera. So there was a lot of that shit.
Transfers still intrigue everyone, though. I remember once upon a time you would have, say, the transfer rumours on BBC would disappear come the first week of September. Now, the next day, they'll still go transfers that almost happened, transfers that could happen in January. We're obsessed with this.
Yeah, we are. And I think the series looks at it. And I think the genesis of it all goes back to the 50s, really, and the first real exceptional movement of players. And one of the episodes of the series looks at the move of Alfredo Di Stefano to Real Madrid. Now, as I mentioned at the start, some of these transfers are kind of like, it might have been a bit of crack if Ronaldo went to Rangers or if Mikey Johnson had ended up at Flamengo, like, or the story of that almost happening. But as I mentioned in the podcast, nothing goes so far, or one move goes so far as to defining the legacy of one club, and it's also its rivalry with another, as the move of Di Stefano to Real Madrid, because he should have been a Barcelona player. Like, in all intents and purposes, there's footage of, when I went digging around in pursuit of material for this, found footage on YouTube buried in a Di Stefano documentary in Spanish of him training in a Barcelona gear. And you're like, it's a different world. Like, do Real Madrid win the first handful of European Cups if Di Stefano is not a key member of that attack? Probably not. Yeah. They have a very good side regardless, like your Raymond Copas and your Ferenc Puskas's of this world. But
you're adding the player of his time.
The player of his time is Alfredo Di Stefano. If he's not there, does it happen or not? There was a really complicated backstory to how he ended up at Real Madrid. So initially there was a player strike in Argentina. Players weren't happy that they weren't able to negotiate contracts in line with, you know, modern pay scales, etc. So a bunch of them, and there was a handful of players from River Plate in particular, ended up in Colombia in what was a breakaway league called the Dimayor, where they were offering these massive contracts.
It was the Live Golf of its era.
Genuinely,
you were
going
to be banned by FIFA by playing it.
And that, if you ever look up Di Stefano's Wikipedia page and it says like four games internationally for Colombia, this is why. They're not official Colombia games, because Colombia for that period of time were banned by FIFA because of this outlaw league. Di Stefano is one of a load of Argentinians that end up there. He ends up getting a bit tired from his, you know, different tours that they have to do, one of which takes him to the Chamartín at the time, which is what the Bernabeu was called at the time, for a series of friendlies. One's with Norrköping, another one is with Real Madrid. He performs so well with Real Madrid, Real actually start courting him, but it is Barcelona who gain the whip hand and actually succeed in, they think, securing his signature.
I don't want to give away this episode too much, but is it simplistic when people claim that Franco got involved and that's the reason the transfer didn't happen? Because definitely for, you know, for Barcelona fans for a long time, this was the accusation. It was, Franco's got an issue with Catalan independence, he's got an issue with the Catalan region, and he made sure the best player went to Real Madrid.
To what I could find, Franco's involvement in this is actually goes back to, or at least Franco's government, goes back to Barcelona's securing of Kubala, the great Hungarian player. So there was obviously trouble getting him registered. He had been a defector from Hungary and ended up signing for Barcelona via, again, kind of backwards methods. But one of the things that got that over the line was the Barcelona board's relatively really good relationship with the Franco government, which goes against everything that we've ever been taught about Spanish football and about Barcelona in particular. But no, Franco doesn't get involved in the Di Stefano case. I don't want to give too much away about it. There is talk of initially before he signs for, or before he is able to begin playing football for Barca, of banning foreign players in Spain to put a stop to the Cabalas and the Di Stefanos of this world. There's also a really odd suggestion from the Spanish FA about what they might do with Di Stefano while he is in Spain. And then there's a massive Italian club are somehow thrown into the mix as well. It is one of the most intriguing transfer sagas you will ever come across because, as I say, it does so much towards defining the successes, early successes. Like, Madrid only had a couple of league titles to their name before Di Stefano arrives. They suddenly become a super club afterwards. It's no, you know, those two things are inextricably linked. Barcelona had been, up until that point, the more successful of the two clubs. that begins to trail off after Di Stefano heads. They do have a couple of league championships between the arrival of Cruyff in the late 80s and this period here in the late 50s. But it tapers off and Real Madrid are off into the stratosphere because of this thing.
Well, I think before Cruyff comes in, Atletico Madrid have more trophies than Barcelona. Yeah. That's the 60s and the late 50s, obviously when Real became incredible, was basically a barren wasteland.
Yeah, and the Franco regime did begin to have a further impact on Barcelona and Catalan efforts for their recognition, et cetera, during the that interregnum between Real Madrid's success initially and that Cruyff period, and there's a bit of neuroses creep into it and into Barcelona. But you're kind of asking yourself how much of that would have been cured if they had signed Di Stefano, or did the Stefano signature and move had have actually gone ahead, because it was as good as done. So hence the episode.
6-part series. Mario Kempes to Spurs will also come up as well. So next Monday, if you want to hear about Ronaldo, how he could have maybe ended up at Rangers, it's going to be available on the OTB Football Podcast feed, I assume, as well, Richie, wherever anyone gets their podcast.
Absolutely, William.
Don't stay away as long as next time.
I'm going to have some Super Moon waffles now.
All right, cheers, Rich. Best of luck with the podcast.
Thanks, Will.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by William Hill. Download the app and play today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.